Exodus chapter 26. And it's about the actual tabernacle and its things associated with it.
Moreover, you shall make the tabernacle with 10 curtains of fine twined linen, blue and purple and scarlet yarns. You shall make them with cherubim skillfully worked into them. The length of each curtain shall be 28 cubits, and the breadth of each curtain 4 cubits. All the curtains shall be the same size. 5 curtains shall be coupled to one another, and the other 5 curtains shall be coupled to one another. And you shall make loops of blue on the edge of the outermost curtain in the first set. Likewise, you shall make loops on the edge of the outermost curtain in the second set. 50 loops you shall make on the one curtain, and 50 loops you shall make on the edge of the curtain that is in the second set. The loops shall be opposite one another. You shall make 50 clasps of gold, and couple the curtains one to the other with the clasps, so that the tabernacle may be a single whole. You shall also make the curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. 11 curtains you shall make. The length of each curtain shall be 30 cubits, and the breadth of each curtain 4 cubits, and 11 curtains shall be the same size. You shall couple 5 curtains by themselves and 6 curtains by themselves, and the 6th curtain you shall double over at the front of the tent. You shall make 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost in one set, and 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that is outermost on the second set. You shall make 50 clasps of bronze, and put the clasps into the loops, and couple the tent together, that it may be a single whole. And the part that remains of the curtains of the tent, the half curtains that remains, shall hang over the back of the tabernacle. And the extra that remains in the length of the curtains, the cubit on the one side and the cubit on the other side, shall hang over the sides of the tabernacle, on this side and that side, to cover it. And you shall make for a tent covering of tanned ram skins and a covering of goat skins on top. You shall make upright frames for the tabernacle of acacia wood. 10 cubits shall be the length of the frame, and a cubit and a half the breadth of each frame. There shall be 2 tenons on each side for fitting together. So shall you do for all the frames in the tabernacle. You shall make the frames for the tabernacle 20 frames for the south side, and 40 bases of silver you shall make under the 20 frames, 2 bases under one frame for its 2 tenons, and 2 bases under the next frame for its 2 tenons, and for the second side of the tabernacle on the north side 20 frames, and there 40 bases of silver, 2 bases under one frame and 2 bases under the next frame, and for the rear of the tabernacle westward you shall make 6 frames. And you shall make 2 frames for corners of the tabernacle in the rear, and they shall be separate beneath, but joined at the top, at the first ring. Thus shall it be with both of them. They shall form the 2 corners. And there shall be 8 frames with their bases of silver, 16 bases, 2 bases under one frame and 2 bases under another frame. You shall make 2 bars of acacia wood, 5 for the frames of the one side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the frames of the other side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars for the frames of the side of the tabernacle at the rear westward. The middle bar, halfway up the frames, shall run from end to end. You shall overlay the frames with gold, and shall make their rings of gold for holders for the bars, and you shall overlay the bars with gold. Then you shall erect the tabernacle according to the plan for it that you were shown on the mountain. And you shall make a veil of purple and blue and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen. And it shall be made with cherubim skillfully worked into it. You shall hang it on 4 pillars of acacia overlaid with gold, with hooks of gold on 4 bases of silver. And you shall hang the veil from the clasps and bring the ark of the testimony in there within the veil. And the veil shall separate for you the holy place from the most holy. You shall put the mercy seat on the ark of the testimony in the most holy place, and you shall set the table outside the veil, and the lampstand on the south side of the tabernacle opposite the table, and you shall put the table on the north side. You shall make a screen for the entrance of the tent, of blue and purple and scarlet yarns and fine twined linen, embroidered with needlework. You shall make for the screen 5 pillars of acacia, and overlay them with gold. Their hooks shall be of gold, and you shall cast 5 bases of bronze for them.
Any thoughts? Yes.
Just notice it's very specific, a lot on repeating the numbers, the 50s and the 6 and the 20, and eastward and or westward and things most holy. It's interesting. I'd like to know more of the meaning.
She may have an answer for you.
I don't know if I have an answer for all those numbers that Sean seems to be saying, but I just notice in general, just if I could summarize the title of the whole chapter, it really is about how to cover up that which is holy. All of this is about all these different coverings. Cover this, cover that. This is how you cover this and how you cover that.
Right.
I just found that pattern was interesting to me.
Any more comments? Yes, God does work in specific numbers. We know that. 50 is one of them. 10 is another one. What? 7. We're talking about just the tabernacle here at this particular point in time. Now, what we're looking here, it looks like it's just a bunch of descriptions of how, what it is. But you remember what Moses was told, you will need to make a place for me to dwell. And so the very first word is, however, thou shalt make a dwelling place. Now, where it says tabernacle, that's just a simple word for dwelling place. It's not a tent. Some of your translations use the word tent. It's not a tent. Tent is something entirely different. It's not designed for anything else except be movable. This was not designed to be, move anytime you want. This is designed for what reason? For whom? That's where he said he would come, right? Now, we talked about last week about certain things that were to be made of the furniture first, right? The first thing was the ark, right? And the next thing was that so-called mercy seat, which is really the seat of atonement, technically speaking. And then you go from there. We have the two archangels at both ends with wings so they could, quote, fly with them, end of quote. Even though it's made of gold, the angelic world, this particular angelic world, those he wanted to display for everybody else, well, these are the ones that can move very rapidly. Perhaps faster than perhaps others. I do not know. It's just a thought. and then here now comes the structure of his dwelling place. Now, since we got the lampstand made, and the table made, and the showbread table made, all that there in structure already designed in the first chapter, or chapter 25, I should say. Now we're coming to the structure of the actual dwelling place of the Creator of heaven and earth, in a sense. And he said, make sure you make it just like it says up there you saw on the mountain. So apparently, if I can use this terminology, Moses is given a tremendous amount of insight on how to do this stuff. But he wasn't the only one. Later on we'll find out as the chapters continue on that he gave the insight to other certain men to do the very same thing that he gave Moses. And he said, I will give them my spirit so they will do this job. And so it wasn't just up to Moses only. Moses' job was to make sure it's arranged in exact order and formation, we could say that, or pattern that you saw on the mountain. The individual people down there and the men and the women were making the parts, but how us to assemble it together and to put it together, even the Bible doesn't even tell you how to do that. It tells you what it's made of, but doesn't tell you how to put them together and what its shape should look like. We'll talk about that more in detail next week. There are two basic patterns. One is a very familiar one that everybody is used to, and that's the rectangular, long rectangular shape of a tabernacle, which is probably the most common of the bunch. I'll explain more in lead detail. I had these drawings in my computer, but then it got updated, and I forgot to save those particular. And so I had to go back and redraw them all over again. So in vain stupidity, I wasn't aware of it. I went and looked for them. Where'd they go? I thought I made prints of them. And apparently I did, and I made prints of other things, but I didn't make a print of that one. If I had, I'd just make Xerox copies of the thing, and you'd have them all. Xerox? Odd word. Anyway, so coming in here, talking about this thing, and about 10 curtains, and the woven linen, with three different colors in it. Blue, purple, and scarlet. I don't know how it was designed, I don't know the pattern, but within these patterns, there had to be an image. What was the image had to be inside the pattern? A cherub. Or cherubim, actually. So it's a plurality of probably two for each one of these pieces of cloth, if you call cloth or fabric. And designed with it, and they'd be weaved in them. So there was, I think, I don't know how it was done, because I'm not a person who knows how that knowledge could be take place. Whether it's weaved in as they were making the fabric itself, that is taking the linen threads and making the pattern and then changing the threads, or it was put in there after, where there was weaved in and out, more than like, am I thinking, after they did the overall pattern of fabric, then they weaved in the pattern of the cherubim on top of all of that. So I don't think it was kind of, my personal opinion, which doesn't mean anything, but mine's it looks like what could take place. Now, we talked about the cherubim last time. Why would he want them on the curtains, or on these one of these curtains? What was the purpose of the cherubim? Protectors, okay. What else? It's also like a shield, a guard, all the way around. So we're talking about the temple, or the tabernacle, I should say, being completely surrounded by the angelic world. Because that's what's up there. All right? Remember the 24 elders? The book of Revelation talks about them. They're always there, always present. Then there's four around the throne itself. So those are ones that surround him completely. And so we're seeing the tent, if it ever could possibly picture. I don't know. I do have no idea what a cherub looks like. I mean, people have different images of it. And so I've never seen one. If I ever did see one, I'd probably be terrified and fall on my face and faint. But anyway, I'm just a brave guy, you know. I can take it. Anyway, the description of this thing is very important. Now, it talks about, they'll make 10, it says, the length of each curtain, there are 10 curtains now to be made. We'll talk about that a bit. 22 cubics, which is an awful lot. We're basing the cubic, by the way, on 18 inches, not on 22. Now, you've heard that the royal cubic is 22 inches. If it was based upon the royal one, this is a huge monstrosity thing. But the royal cube didn't come into existence until King Solomon, or thereabouts. That's why it was called the royal one. It was just, had to be bigger, you know. Like, you know, Texas had to be bigger than anybody else. And then Alaska came along and wiped them out. Anyway, if you're big, you know, that's just a way of philosophy. I don't know the answers to all that stuff. But anyway, it was basically what I could tell you. It was 54 inches by 40 by 72 inches, which is basically, for you women, it's 17 yards plus 2 by 2 yards. It's 17 yards by 2 yards, nominally speaking, which is quite a bit of fabric. 14 yards is an awful lot. Well, they probably would have, sewn them together as they went along. I mean, you got this 10 of these things. Later on, it talks about these of 5 and 5. or we bound together by a certain binding together. And we're talking about these loops. We'll talk about those in a minute. And the clips. They had to make the material. They didn't. I don't think they came out of Egypt with that much cloth. But it's unlike us. It took them a year to make this thing, by the way. A whole year to build this whole thing. So, you know, it's not like it was overnight operation. It took a long time for them to make it. And they would have had to go out and get the material, hunt it down, and get it and bring it into where they were staying. It wasn't like it was there where the water was in the middle of the desert or in the middle of Mount Sinai. They had to go out and get the stuff. Acacia wood? Acacia wood wasn't available there. They had to go out and get it. And they had brought it back. The acacia wood is not like timber. It's a woody plant, basically. It's got a lot of branches on it. They don't have a big, huge, you know, base and stalk and like a timber. We think of timber here, where you take it to the mill and cuts it down, you got a wonderful plank. No, they had to make each one of these planks. And basically the planks was, let me take this here for a minute. This is a basic understanding, which I have seen, and explained how it was done. I'm going to use acacia wood. They know they had to make it. So when they cut the acacia wood, Daniel won't mind. I always have to come here, and sometimes erase his artistic work. Then I put up my sloppy stuff. To understand a little bit about it. Now, since it's made out of strips of branches, they had to cut the branches, and then they had to plane them or make them smooth in order that they would be straight up and down, because wood, trees and branches don't always stay where you want them. So basically, if I could do this, it's basically built like a rectangular form. And within the frame, we'll read that later, they had to have a hole. Through it. So when you're looking at a frame, that's what it kind of looked like. I don't know exactly how thick the wood was. I don't know exactly how thick each plank was and how precision, because I wasn't there. I have no idea. But basically, I've seen them basically for the purpose of demonstration. That's kind of how it looked like, all right? Not really fancy, because God is not a person who has a lot of fancy stuff. His stuff is really kind of plain, not added. And of course, you know, certain things had to be done with this particular piece of wood. But the wood was how wide? 2.5 cubits. So what's 2.5 cubits? Well, multiply 2.5 times 18.
So 44.
18 inches. So multiply 2.5 times 18 inches. What do you get? 27. Wait, 18 and 18? 18. And you add another. It's one plank or two planks?
45.
That's not right, is it? That's not coming the wrong length. Where did I find that at? Let's see. Cubic. I had that written down here. About the planks. Planks. Do I want to hold on for a minute? It's 1.5. Not 2.5, it's 1.5. Which is 18 plus 9. Which is 27, yeah. So it's 27 inches. That's how wide it was. That wasn't very big. a man can handle that one, right? I mean, a little over 2 feet. And I think it was, I don't know if I have that written down here. I got it written down here somewhere. I'm not that well organized today. My mind was on something else. Working on all this stuff. Oh, I can't remember. I remember that somewhere this is like 15 feet high. And I think they were doubled together, two of them together. I'm not quite sure. I'll have to go back and read and do some research on that. It's not that important right now anyway. But just get you an idea. On verse 3, oh, by the way, reading this thing on, we talk about the length. You know, it's 26 cubits, verse 2. When you multiply 26 times 18, instead we get how many feet? No, we have to go, it's going to be 40, I got it written down, it's 42 feet. And I think 6 inches. Is that right? Oh, no. No, just 40. That's how long. Let's say that we have a picture of the tabernacle, which is a typical picture. The entryway to the big one is right through here. All right? And this is supposed to be 42 feet. That's how long they say it is. We'll talk about that much later next week. But it's pretty long, don't you think? In verse 3, now, and interesting when you read on in Hebrew, and you start reading it in Hebrew, the words are not exactly the same. I find it very fascinating. I had to take it back. The word for a curtain in Hebrew is feminine. And therefore, all adjectives, adverbs, and verbs have to be feminine. Makes logical sense, right?
Adjectives, verbs, and adverbs.
If the subject matter is feminine, all of them have to be feminine as well. If it's masculine, all have to be masculine. In this particular case, curtain is a feminine word. It means to cover or to surround. All right, basically. And when I read this in Hebrew, he says, make 5 curtains, verse 3, shall be coupled to one another, and 5 other curtains will be coupled to one another. Literally in Hebrew it says, they will be coupled to woman to sister. That's literally what it says. It's a fascinating terminology, but the two are coming together. You're uniting the woman with the sister.
Wow.
Isn't that really fascinating terminology? So they're all becoming. It's, by the word echad, we know that means one. But if it's one is an adjective in this case, and since the adjective has to agree with the verb, I mean the noun, it's not echad. It's echot. It's got ends with a T. Very fascinating. Just a side thing about that. Let's see, what else? The loops. Verse 5. And there we are. And talk about these loops. Now, loop is also a feminine word, and so they use the word one curtain, mean same thing, meaning the feminine firm of means one curtain, and 5 loops. So all these loops are feminine. Now, why is it feminine? I find it very fascinating in studying Hebrew why certain words are masculine, why certain words are feminine. Don't think on anything about male or female. Why is one masculine and why is one feminine? What does one thing tell you and the other thing tell you? You don't know. All right. Put away the size, put away the thing of giving birth. All right. I mean, we have a thing called the United States Navy calls their big things that float. They call it a she. Why do they call it a she for? What is the ship doing? It's carrying cargo or carrying people. It's doing something.
Covering what's inside.
It's actually protecting that which is inside. Right? So it won't sink. Simple as that, right? And the very same thing, when you think about this tabernacle, since the curtains are all around it, they're being protected, because that's the function of the, not female, but of the feminine phrase in Hebrew. It's that which protects, or that which covers. We use the word, we talked about this, I can't remember what it was right offhand. We talk about hedges, you know, there's a hedge around something. That's a feminine terminology. You put a hedge of thorns around. Why put a hedge of thorns around? To protect? Yeah, it's to protect. And if you're inside the thorns, you're protected. Right? Now, what are most women that you know of, when it comes to family, what is the biggest trait that women have that men don't have when it comes to children? They what?
I know I am. I'm very protective.
What does the man do? He's out there in the field doing something else. What is she doing? Taking care of the family, taking care of the kids. Her mind is everywhere. She knows exactly where the kid's doing. She knows what's going on. The guy says, what do you do? What do you do? Men are not aware of how all those things happen because men are one, quote, track mind, in a quote. They think this. Tell us over. They think that. Tell us over. They think that. They never put those things together. You got to build a roof. You don't think about the foundation. You don't think about anything else. I got to build a roof. So you build a roof. Now what do you do? Well, I got to put stuff on top of it. Okay. Now you put that stuff on top. Frame one thing at a time. You know, foundation first. You can't build a house without a foundation. They start building the foundation. And that's the way it is with the male thinking, male brain. And I think it has to do with also how God handles and why he does for him what he does for him. And so, needless to say, what all this stuff means to you? What does it mean to me? Why should we care about it? What is this all about? I'll talk more in detail next week about this Holy of Holies. Very, very important thing. He said where to place in front of the Holy of Holies, what goes on the north side, what goes on the south side, what goes inside of it, and what covers what's inside. You remember what covers what's inside?
Red.
No. Inside that Holy of Holies. What is inside the Holy of Holies? It's the Ark with the testimonies and the mercy seat. Then there's something covering it. What's it called?
Badger skin.
What?
Badger skin.
No, badger skin covers everything. Even the outer tab, even all this stuff here, all outside and on top of everything else, the whole bad. First it was goat skin, and then the badger skin was on top of that. Or what I talked about last week was more like a waterproof blue skin. Yes?
It's a veil that covers
veil.
The Torah.
Now, this onto something that we see in Hebrews, and what does it say about that veil? It got torn. When he was even killed, what happened to the veil in the temple? It got torn. Now, it's an unusual word in Hebrew. What do you think that word in Hebrew means? Which has been translated as, okay, a curtain or a veil. But it comes from a verb. In Hebrew, it comes from a verb. Why is it translated a curtain or a veil? When the verb says, it means harshness, severity, cruelty. Something is to be broken apart. That which must be fractured severely and crushed. Now, why would God tell Moses to put this piece of fabric and it's going to be ripped apart? Because that's the name of the fabric, the one that rips apart. Now, talk about prophecy. The very thing, the very beginning, before New Testament time, before the prophets, before them all, was this veil. And it was to face, to cover something or prevent something from being seen. What was it to prevent was to be seen? The Most Holy. Why would God want it not to be seen? I have to ask a question because it doesn't seem to add up. Now, there's certain priesthood, we'll find out, that we're allowed to actually go in and cover the thing up. Okay? A certain sect of the priesthood was allowed to go into this veil of veils, or holy of holies, and actually do the covering of it all. And the other priests had to go in and then, with the poles, move it on out. There's only a certain sector of the tribe of Aaron, of the family of Aaron, was allowed to move it. It wasn't just any one of the family of Aaron. It had to be a certain descendant of one of the sons of Aaron to come and do that part. So it's very fascinating to realize that all this was to be done in order to prevent something from happening or something from being known, or I would say more clearly, something was to be hidden until the appointed time. Then it was revealed. Everything, when I've done so much study, I found that there, every time when there is a holy period of time, like say Days of Unleavened Bread, or the 70 weeks, or there, and then the Feast of Tabernacles, there is a beginning within that part. There's a new origin of time. I'll give you an example. Way back at time of Moses' time, Abraham's time. You remember he said, your descendants will be there for 400 years. All right. Now you do mathematically figure it all out. Abraham was 75 years old when he entered into the land of Canaan, right? And how old was he when Ishmael was born? 85. Okay. So let's do some math here. This is what I understand what I'm trying to say here. And when I see these numbers and see these events inside the tabernacle, it's telling me a story inside of the story. Alright, telling me something to look at before just considering it just a piece of cloth and a lot of wood. 75 years old, then 85 years old. How old was he when he had Isaac? 100. What's that tell you? God made a promise, did he not, to Abraham. When he first entered into the Holy of Holies, into the land of Canaan, he says, I will bless you, and the world will be blessed because of you, or in you, there will be a seed. Did that begin With Ishmael? When did it begin? With Isaac. So the promise of the promise to come, the promise of the Messiah come, didn't happen at 75 nor 85, but at 100. Now, did God delay his promise? So he has a time within the time. Now there's 400. Apostle Paul talked about 430 years. And God said 400 years. Oh my. What's the 30 years? Apostle Paul says, from the time of Abraham to the time they left, or actually went to Mount Sinai, it was 430 years. And God talked about just 100. What's the 30 years? Why did Apostle Paul use 30? Why all through the rest of the time you read it's always 430, but the one place God said 100? Is God off or are they off? There was a time within the time, a time within the Moedim. How old was a certain man who took over Egypt? How old was he? He was 30. 30 years old. So now we backtrack. The promise was given to him when he was 100. But it wasn't until after Jacob and during time of Jacob, his life, and the son, Joseph, was the one of rare ones that could see, God let him see dreams, right? Now, there's that 30 years. God planned inside of the promise he gave to Abraham that your descendants will be there for 100 years. Who there before the 100 years? Joseph. Joseph took control 430 years from a given point in time. We won't talk about that today because that's not important today. But I'm doing this because when we come to time, there are two origins of time. When God created mankind, he created them in an origin of a time cycle. Right? Now, inside of this time of man beginning to live, from Adam to now, there are time cycles within the time. Just like it was, I show you there with Abraham. God's time of the promise didn't happen at 75 years old. It happened when he was 100. So a new count begins. A new origin of time. And that origin of time is God's origin of time. Or I would call it the Moedim. The beginning of time. Now, he has got a different world of timing than we do. This is the reason why we as human beings can get lost waiting for this, quote, 6,000 years to go and the 7,000 year to begin. What if it's not within our origin of time, but God has a different set of timing? Because one thing is very clever with God. He doesn't tell anybody, does he? Did he tell Abraham, by the way, I'm bringing you over there, I'm going to send you into the land of Canaan, I'm going to give the promise to you, but it's not going to come until a man named Joseph or a man named Isaac is born. No. He had no idea. He said he wandered to and fro or in the land of Canaan looking for something, looking for the promise. He never found it, did he? He never lived long enough to see his descendants go into Egypt. But he was told they were going to. He didn't know when. He didn't know the origin of time. that God has. Do you understand what I'm saying when we talk about the origin of time? The Moedim is not based upon our time as we live on this earth. It's based upon the origin of time that God has set. And when you go to Genesis, the first chapter, and you go there to the fourth day, there is this setting he sets aside. We think, oh yeah, okay, yeah, daytime and nighttime and moon time. And we say, oh, we know what the origin of time. We know we have a great understanding of the appointed time, because after all, the Jews couldn't be wrong. Right? The Christians could be right. No, they could be wrong too. It is not whether who's right or who's wrong. It's the counting of the origin when he begins something. There's more mathematical things with Abraham. I'll show you someday. It includes a number called 490 years. Now, when you talk about 490 years, what does that mean? 77 times 7. 70 times 10. Wow. And that age, and that point of 490 years in the numbering of Abraham, something happened. So, we will talk about that much later. But I just want you to know that we look here at this very awesome thing called the tabernacle, and we don't know exactly what it looked like. We have no idea. But we have to kind of picture in our mind, it's not the physical thing of it that matters. Although I will show you two examples of the physical thing that was there. However, that's not the issue. What is the object of the 26th chapter? Where God is dwelling. Now we know that Revelation just says that he's going to come down, he's going to tabernacle with people. Yes?
So many times on things like this, the deeper meanings are not readily available. We took linen and covered it with goat's hair and then looked at a leather covering. The leather covering hasn't happened yet. But if you look at the tabernacle, as Richard, when you and I saw it in Israel, they have a replica. And if you look down on it, it looks like a bed. Because you've got linen sheets, you have a wool blanket, and then it's covered, supposed to be covered with skin.
Dark blue skin.
Blue, I thought it was red. At any rate.
No, it's red. The Hebrew word there comes from, it means the blue color.
Oh, that's right.
It means the blue color.
Well, what's funny is it blocks radiation. Those components. Our bed has two linen and
we have a cover that covers everything, right?
Goat hair. Well, the linen does right now, but the goat hair was in itself amazing. But there are meanings to this.
Then there's something over that. Why would God want another skin covering over all of that? Because it might rain. Every time they moved it, whether it was sunny or not, that's the first thing, the last thing they put on, they had to put that skin over everything before they moved it. Why? Because they didn't want bugs to get to it? Yeah, that's called the badger skin. It's not really a badger now. That animal didn't exist in those days in that area. It's another animal. Yes. It was leather. Basically, it's a leather. Oh, skin. Actually, we're using skin, not leather. Like cowhide is leather. This is a piece of skin. And they didn't have to treat it. Why would he do this?
To protect everything. Would that have something to do with circumcision?
Vision?
Circumcision? Brit Milah?
No. Had to do what she said. Covering. Why this last covering? Why is a beautiful thing? Why cover it with something else? Why cover it? What is the object of the covering?
Something had to die to put that there.
So like a what?
I mean, the animal had to die to put that there and protect it. So it's like the blood of Jesus.
Interesting. Reason why I want to, I'm asking this question because I want you to think. Okay, I do this a reason because that's what I do, and it offends some of you. I don't want to be offended to you, but I just want you to put your brain together and say, okay, maybe it's this, maybe it's that, maybe it's this. I want you to look at a different plane rather than the physical plane of it. What has to do with the tabernacle, which is where God dwells? Yes.
To cover the glory? No.
I know. Nobody can enter the holy place unless they're a certain person. And it's to protect, I'm thinking, others if anything should get blown off or blown over, because nobody can see in there they're going to die. So would it be to protect the people there?
Okay.
Or
That's a good point. Now, God's using a covering here to cover everything. Yes?
One more. You say it's not physical. You're looking for something that's not a physical thing. Is that right?
Yes, because he said, do it like you saw in the mountain. What was Moses supposed to see when he saw the objects that he had to see, and he knew this skin was used to the final thing? What was it covering? Or let me put this word. What was it concealing?
Okay, so, so then the death part of it, but the reviving from the dead is also there. God is able to revive the dead.
Okay.
Is it sealing the covenant promise?
What promise?
Well, Abraham, he made a covenant with Abraham.
Okay. I'm going to run out of time. I've got a little more time left. The object of the veil was to cover or conceal. Now we have this blue skin covering everything. When do we or anybody get to see what it looks like when that is removed? Like no one's allowed to go into the Holy of Holies. Except now we can enter into the Holy of Holies according to the writers of Hebrews. So not only was the veil removed, we got to see and be part of it, connected to the mercy seat or the seat of atonement. All right? Because basically that's what Yom Kippurim is all about. He entered into the Holy of Holies, and we now are free to go into that very same place. The skin is no longer hiding anything. We will be able to see the throne of God. We'll be able to see Him. Nothing's going to cover Him. Nothing will see the glory of God as He really is. Where His sit is, where His tabernacle, where His dwelling place is at. His dwelling place is not made of acacia wood. It's not made of linen. It's not made of badger skin or the blue skin. It's not made of, what's it made of? See, we live on this earth, and God has given us physical things so we can see and understand where He lives. Now, you think God really needs to have all this physical stuff to show exactly where He lives? What apostle saw the throne?
John.
What did he see?
He saw it was beautiful. He saw stones and beautiful
Didn't look anything like the description we see there during Moses' time, do we? We didn't see a tabernacle. We didn't see a holy of holies. We didn't see a curtain. We didn't see no covering. We saw, or he saw, the throne of the Creator. He also saw one more thing up there. Remember what it was? That's not what he said he saw. What else did he see up there? Huh?
He saw a lot of stuff.
He saw the 420 elders.
There's a certain thing he saw that the tabernacle had within it.
He saw the seraphim,
the what?
The cherubim.
The ark that held the testimony. He saw the ark that held the testimony. Wow. Ever thought about that before? As we go through this very long, laborious subject matter, from this point to the end of Exodus, it seems like it's dragging on and on and on. But there's something that is telling us over and over again. This is where I live. This is where I'm at. And this is where I'm taking you. You're going to come with me. You don't have to have incense. Don't have to catch on fire. And you just put it inside the curtain so it's smoky so you can't see anything. Because there's no curtain. Why would you need to carry incense into the Holy of Holies? Yeshua didn't carry incense into the Holy of Holies. Did he carry incense?
No, he was light, period.
He entered himself. Right? So what does all that incense represent? We say, well, it represents the prayers of the saints. Oh, yes, I know that's what Scripture says. But when he entered in, what did he represent? He, sorry, what?
The priest represented the sins of all the people.
Any thought? I think it's very fascinating here, and I'm sorry, maybe I'm way off. Yes? An advocate? I would say a little differently. He's entering into the Holy of Holies because he represents us. We don't look at ourselves as being holy unto God. We don't look at ourselves that we are to be, we look at ourselves to be, we must be separate in Greek, I mean in Hebrew, it's very fascinating terminology. He says to, you want to, the veil is to separate something. I want the holy, HaKadosh, right, and being from, I want from, the holy and holies. So, and we just translate, we say, well, what does that mean? We use the word most holy. But there's a holy place, then there's another place called the holy place. And he wanted a separation between the place that's called the holy place and the other place that's called the holy places. I use that word. There's no such word as holies, plurality. It doesn't work. But it's another terminology. And in Hebrew, it is a plurality. And you're going to be separating something. And now that separation is gone, right? And when that separation is gone, and the Messiah represents us, I mean, I have to ask myself a question. Mr. Jesus is an advocate. Who's he an advocate for? Us, okay? Who does he have to present evidence to? Okay, good. But I see it a little differently. Please forgive me. The one who brings forth the accusation is not the Father. So he's an advocate against the devil. Because now he represents us. And he says, Father, here they are. And Dad's going to say, bring them on in. We don't have to be proven to God. By the way, I want to say, this guy over here, I brought, before he comes in here, Father, I know you had something against him. I know that, but I died for him. Would you accept him? And Father says, well, let me think about it. No. He said, because he loved his creation so much that he gave his son, that his creation may have life. That's done once. So if anything be an advocate, it's mercy and anger against the accuser. You understand what I'm saying? Kind of weird. But when I look at this Feast of Tabernacles, not Feast of Tabernacles, sorry, it's not the feast at all, about this tabernacle and how it was built and why the veil was there and the holy seat and all that stuff and the candlesticks and the showbread and the incense, I said, wow, this is what it took for his son to bring us home, if I can use that terminology. Because God did not create Adam and Eve to kill him. He created Adam and Eve to be like him. And then the accuser showed up on the scene. Does that make sense to you?
Yes.
I know that we got a lot more to go through for the rest of the book. It's quite long in relationship to the whole tabernacle and the building of it. It'll probably go through a lot faster. You don't have to accept what I'm saying, but I just want you to realize that this stuff that we are showing physically how it's done, and I'll show you a couple drawings. I'll even pass it out. I'll make copies and pass it out to you, and you can do what you want to do with them. But it's just a picture. It's a picture of something that is above. It's not the physical. It's the spiritual. It's where God is at. And who is surrounded by him? The angelic world, completely around him. The 24 elders, completely around him. Would you like to see that someday?
Yeah.
Well, John did. And I imagine, of course, he was still awestruck by it and terrified by it. And he said, don't be afraid. Yeah, right. Uh-huh. I'm still flesh and blood. I'm afraid.
You can't see it now from John's eyes if we read Revelation.
Well, that's true. But at the same time,
but we will see it someday.
We had this. God portrayed it in Moses' time.
Yes.
It was revealed then. And after the death and resurrection of the Messiah, and 20 years or many, 40 years later, all of a sudden John got to see something different that he never saw before. And there it was. Even Ezekiel didn't see that. John did. Wow. That's a big thing, don't you think?
Yeah.